Welcome to the Speak Like a Leader podcast with John Bates.
Welcome to the show. With me today is Ulrike Seminati, and she is someone who I feel is maybe in some ways cut from the same cloth as I am, and she is a communication coach for leaders. She's a former corporate communication executive, and she combines both the doing of leadership and the being of leadership. Find her at Ulrike Seminati. That's ULRIKESEMINATI.com, and also at LinkedIn.com/in/ Ulrike Seminati. We'll put those in the show notes for you. And welcome, Ulrike. I know that you're not on my continent. I think are you in Zurich? Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. First of all, thank you for having me on the show, John. That's a great, great pleasure. Yes, I'm based in Switzerland, in Zurich, and I'm operating from there a bit across the world, as everything I do online. So that's the big advantage of the pandemic now, that it has become very frequent, very common, actually, to do that.
Yes, yeah, we both like that.
Yeah.
I say I'm based in Salt Lake City, available globally, you know? And with what we've all learned to do a lot better, that works. It is really cool to be able to work with people all over the world virtually.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it has its advantages and disadvantages. And as you think about communication probably today, I mean, that's also a big challenge for many, to communicate over the screen with a little window where you see not even half of the body language or the nonverbal cues. And it has advantages and disadvantages. But I think people can make most out of it if they know what to watch out for.
Yeah. You know, let's talk about that first. It wasn't something that we necessarily plan to go straight into, but it's one of the things that I see a lot of leaders still, I mean, I hate to say it this way, but I think it's just true, making big mistakes with, and really damaging their leadership presence, because now your leadership presence, there's a lot about that that's based in your virtual presence, your video presence. What are some of the things that you see that people could do better there, Ulrike, in this challenge of communicating over kind of a small screen versus in person?
So first of all, people need to understand how much insecurity it creates. And I think people feel that. They feel that themselves, that they don't feel very comfortable often in online meetings, especially when you're the presenter and you see these little poker faces all over the screen, have no clue if people are listening to you or doing something else. Because we are used to analyze nonverbal cues as well, and even more than the verbal ones. Whereas on screen, we get mostly the verbal ones, or even only if there's a black screen with a name on it, which is the worst case scenario. And so it creates insecurity. That's the first thing, just to understand that there is this insecurity. And when we look into best practices when it comes to communication as such, one of the obvious things is that usually when you're in a room with people, you try to have eye contact. You establish this human contact by looking into the eyes of people. Now, in online meetings, again, it's not possible because you will not stare into your little camera hole. And if you look on screen, you slightly look away. Actually, that's what people got used to. I think that's not really the issue. But what I see as huge mistakes is that as people think anyway, there's no eye contact, so it doesn't really matter how I look on the screen or not. Many people work with two screens, for example, and then they have their camera on the right screen, but they permanently look at the left screen and look away. And even though, and I had so many leaders and they say to me, yes, but I explain it to my team why I'm looking on the left side, because there's the data I have to read and so on and so forth. I said, it doesn't matter. They have a basic brain that is analyzing the fact this guy is looking away. I'm rejected. He's not interested in me, not listening to me. And as a leader, you have zero presence in that moment.
It's so funny that that is where you would go, because that is exactly what I was thinking. And it seems to be to me that it's typically leaders that are higher up. So it matters even more, but they're looking at this other screen. And now everybody that's on that call, their subconscious brain thinks, oh, he or she is ignoring me, right? Yeah. And it tends to be, in my experience, people that are, it's often people that are PhDs and very kind of logical, hard skills people that do that even more because they're looking at the Excel spreadsheet or whatever. But that's why I always say communicating with human beings is not logical. It's biological. And when you understand the biology, you can be vastly more effective than if you don't. And that's one of those huge, huge things. You know, it's hard enough when people aren't looking into the camera. You know, I think looking into the camera is something to actually practice if you want people to have the experience you're with them. But boy, when you look at a different monitor, now everybody thinks you just checked out. And, you know, the other thing that I would love to just highlight in what you said too, I always tell people, if you care about your leadership in this organization and you're on a meeting, even if it's not your meeting and you're not running it, you need to be on video.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Number one, because if you're not, everybody thinks you're playing, you know, Candy Crush. And number two, because that person running the meeting needs to see you. Yeah. And, you know, for you to listen attentively and nod your head and actually act like a participant in that conversation, even though it's virtual, that will just make such an enormous difference.
Yeah. And being aware that there are so few nonverbal cues which people can actually recognize. The micromimics in the face, they can't often see because also the lighting is not good enough.
For example. Yeah.
On the face, that's another thing if you're sitting in the shadow. But send these cues more consciously. If you're in a room, the people feel if you're present, if you're positive towards what they are saying or not. If you're sitting in front of a screen, you have to, like you say, you have to do some movements. And people do not move at all. I mean, seriously, 95% of people, they do not move at all. They're like poker faces sitting in front of you because they don't smile, they don't nod, you never see their hands.
So yeah.
You don't receive any message in return. Yeah. It's if you were in a normal room and the person was just standing up, looking out of the window instead of staying around the table and listening to you. It's exactly the same feeling. And we can't do anything about that bad emotion that we get because it's instinctive. And so even if our rational brain knows why and what, and if it's explained, doesn't matter. Instinctively, we don't feel well, and the person on the other side will not be able to deliver their best because they feel like lost, like rejected. Fear of rejection, one of the biggest fears, is triggered by just not looking at the screen and not sending any signals of reception of the message.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's a very good point. Fear of rejection is just one of our most primal fears. And that's what we feel like when someone's looking at that other monitor or not checking in with the camera even.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, you know, and, you know, again, I think for the person at the top of the hierarchy, they have to be good at this. But for the person who's, you know, not at the top of the hierarchy, this is one of the most powerful ways to signal engagement and signal your own leadership is by showing up powerfully in these video meetings in support of that person who's running the meeting.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, from my experience, leaders in these positions, they have a lot going on. So they say, I'm totally overwhelmed. If I do not do another thing while I'm listening into a meeting, I can't do my job. I'm permanently doing two or three things at the same time, and I cannot afford actually being present like that. And I always tell them, seriously, you have to choose your battle, because that comes at a cost. So is it really better to tackle a lot of tasks and to do all of that and to just, tip the list of everything that you have to do throughout the day, But you lose the engagement of your team or the engagement of some stakeholders, and afterwards you have to catch up again and you create even more work like that. Or is it better to be clear? This is important. I have to engage this person. It's a key player in my team, and whatever else needs to be parked for 45 minutes or whatever this meeting is going on. And I'm there. And I do this as a deliberate way of what I'm doing at work, as deliberate as I'm analyzing an Excel sheet maybe afterwards. Or in the evening, because you had no time throughout the day. That is happening very often as well, unfortunately. Yep. But I think it's a conscious decision. What is more important? And where does this lead to? Not in the second, not in the minute, not on that day, but in the weeks that are coming, because it has an effect on people over time.
You're totally right. I think that's fabulous. Now, one of the other things that I think this disruption in how we work, if you could call it that, I suppose, has done is really amplified the value of something that I know matters a lot to both of us, which is just authenticity in leadership. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. Oh, that's a vast field. It's a vast field. I mean, first of all, I think it's relatively obvious that authenticity requires courage. It requires the courage to be vulnerable, to show up with your flaws, and to be yourself. And to be yourself means you're not perfect. Nobody is. And for people who want to show up as the perfect leader, as a very professional person, it is sometimes very hard to be authentic. Now, authenticity on the other side is, I think, really the only way to truly connect with people, to produce or trigger true trust, which is what leaders want, which will make their life easier over time. But at the same time, you will not please everybody, you will not be liked by everybody, and if you just speak your word because you believe in something that is not very popular inside of your organization, then you might get in some trouble here and there. And it is a conscious decision, and I think it's a journey to get there. Because what I see around in the corporate organizations I worked for and I now work with, is it's very common that people leave 50% or even more of their true personality at the doorstep to the office because they think there's a specific culture, they value a specific leadership type, and I am not that type when I'm myself. So I have to adapt and I have to show just the side of myself that fits into these expectations. And I think this is exactly the wrong thing. We see it everywhere. I know really just a handful of leaders where I'd say they are really authentic. They are really themselves. And if the audience here is, for example, thinking about leaders where they think who are authentic leaders in your environment, you will certainly find these women and men which you admire most likely because you think, wow, what a bold and courageous and honest person. And this is something that we don't find very often in the corporate world, unfortunately, not because people are not honest or don't want to be, but because they think they have to make their career, to stay in their position. And I think it's just the wrong approach in the corporate world as such. I know that if a singular person is just doing that, it's very, very hard. But if you have a more common mindset and awareness around the importance and the value of being authentic, even if it's very different, but that's what people want in the organization. They want diversity, but they don't live it. They don't give the space for it. Because when somebody is really diverse, really different, then it's like irritating and maybe not ready yet, or the person is like stamped not being mature enough or whatever it is. And I think this is exactly the wrong approach. On the one side, there's this will to have diverse teams with authentic people, with great personalities. But on the other side, everything's still done when it comes to promoting people into new roles. It's not happening. It's not valued in reality. And I think this is really a shame.
Yeah. Well, one of the things, because I do a lot of work with leaders on creating their TED-like talks. And one of the things about a true TED-worthy talk is that it is authentic and even has some vulnerability in it. And one of the things that I point out to people is how different it feels to be authentic versus how it feels to listen to somebody else who's authentic, right? Like Brené Brown's TED talk is a great example. She it's fabulous, right? Everybody was like, wow, that's wonderful. She's awesome. I love her. But she went home and like didn't go out of the house for 3 days because she had such a vulnerability hangover from being so authentic. And it scared her, right? Mm-hmm. So it is one of those things that takes courage. And I think that your question is a really good question. Who are authentic leaders in your organization? And how much do you respect them? And then to recognize it's not easy for them either. And you could be authentic as well and really stand out as a leader and make a difference. And it doesn't feel as comfortable as it looks from outside, right?
Yeah. Where I see always the biggest shift in leaders when they understand that is when you have a senior leader who is powerful, who is seen as someone very strong, rather opinionated as well, and who suddenly admits a weakness somehow. That is super, super, super powerful. And people who are in this position and who are used to be kind of perfect, let's say, for 20 years already or even more, for them it's a huge step to do that, huge, huge step to do that. And I always tell them, seriously, it's often with CEOs or C-level executives, say, show up with something that is real. I mean, if you go on your leadership event, for example, and you stand on the stage and you deliver your presentation and everybody thinks you're doing this forever already and it's great and it's so easy for you and you keep that distance. They cannot approach you. People will not ask questions. That's a good sign as well. If people are not asking questions after your presentation, it's not that everything's clear, because people would always have questions, but they don't dare to ask because you're such a person that they think, I can't ask this guy. I will look stupid. Whereas most of these leaders do not feel super comfortable when they go on stage, even if they look like that.
Yeah.
And it would be so powerful if they just came up and say, hey, guys, I know that you think that's easy for me, but you know what? I haven't slept very well because I'm really nervous in delivering this presentation to you today. And then you start. People would say, wow, it's a human being. this guy is nervous as well. I would never have thought that. And they think that they lose something. They lose authority. But it's exactly the opposite. You gain tremendous trust and credibility with doing just these things. And the talk you mentioned with Brené Brown, where she speaks about exactly that, you need to show this vulnerability. And it comes at a price, but it is so powerful. And it's the only way to be authentic. It's the only way. You have to take that risk to show something of yourself that is not the facade that you have built for so many years, painfully built for so many years. And at the end, the impact is just amazing if you get out of this, of this facade. Yeah.
Well, and you know, there's a great saying that I always bring to my trainings from a guy named Les Brown. And it's true for public speakers, but it's also really true for leaders who are essentially public speakers, whether it's external or internal. He says, people don't connect with your successes. They connect with your messes. Your message is in your mess. And it's not necessarily just admitting some mess. I like to attach to that bringing some sort of insight, right? So in your example, you know, I'm up here and I want you to know I actually haven't slept very well for the past couple of nights because what we're doing together means so much to me that I've been nervous about speaking with you today. And here's what I realized. I realized that we're all on the same team. You're all here to succeed. I'm here to support you in that. And so let me share with you what I've come up with, you know, or whatever, right? But to admit that vulnerability and also give us some sort of a lesson out of that vulnerability is a really powerful thing, you know? And it actually demonstrates not that you're some kind of loser because you have some vulnerability, but it actually demonstrates when you do that, that you are actually self-reflective and can learn from difficulties and all that. And that we just like to be around people like that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a bit of knowledge sharing. It's another way of knowledge sharing. You don't see it like this, but that's what it actually is.
Yes. Now, let's talk for a minute about women in leadership, you know, especially when it comes to authenticity and vulnerability and things like that. I think that it would be fair to say it's still, in many ways, a man's world. And for women, I think that vulnerability is maybe even more dangerous feeling and scary.
Yeah, absolutely. It's risky. It is risky in reality, because women are very quickly then put into the box of being too emotional. Yeah. So
right.
If you show vulnerability, it doesn't mean you have to cry, obviously. But if you show vulnerability, creates emotions, and it generates also emotions in the person who's showing that vulnerability. So this is why you need to be a bit careful with that. I think that women who are young, who are starting their career, it's very difficult with the vulnerability, indeed. And I think they have to find their vision, their path first, to be clear about their strengths and to really build on that and build on that network and build on their successes and build their confidence. Whereas the higher you go up in the hierarchy ladder, the more experience you have, the more authority and credibility you have created in your career, the more you can allow for this vulnerability to really show up. But the more usually women lost it because they forgot about it. It's what I mentioned before, when you're for 20 years in a certain way of being, it's very hard to go back to something more authentic and something more vulnerable. So I think it's super important for women who want to actually climb up to the higher positions to understand that one of the big advantages they can create for themselves, one of the big assets they have, is this vulnerability piece. It's not about being even harder and tougher and more result-oriented and more like the typical dominant male leader stigma, basically, that we have out there. But it's more around, okay, what is my vulnerability? What is also my female side, and playing on that instead of fighting against it? I see often that women fight against it because they think they have to. And somehow it's not wrong, because it's a male-dominated world, and it doesn't mean that men are evil. It's just the whole cultural setup in organizations is like that. Women as well. We all fall into this trap of understanding leadership as the typical white male guy in his 50s. That's the image that comes into our mind all around the world, no matter which continent. It's crazy. And this bias obviously plays a big role when it comes to judging leaders. And what I see with women as well is that women are the hardest judges of other women. So as they fight so much for their position, when they see another woman being successful instead of themselves, which is the worst case scenario, they can become really, really bitchy. So it's really not, they can be biting each other. And I think this is a shame, because we have to understand that all human beings and their diversity is this richness of accepting the other, of being curious about someone who is really different, about admiring and valuing the fact that this person is showing the not so evident sides of their personality. And I think this is where it becomes interesting. And this is where it becomes powerful. And to mention the same words as before, it's courageous. And I think seeing it like that puts it into another light than saying, vulnerability, I just have to show my weaknesses, which is not true. I mean, this is just too much simplified. It's about the courage to be yourself and to understand, first of all, who you are, because you might have forgotten that after 20 years in fighting for your career, climbing up step by step the career ladder.
Yeah.
And then you're up there and you think, but who am I actually? Am I still sticking to any values of myself? Am I even clear of having them anymore? You know, have I lost myself? Have I lost my ideals that I had when I started off 20 years ago, for example?
Yeah.
So I think it's really worth a reflection to step back, stop and think about where are you right now and how far is this away from who you actually are within yourself, what you might have buried in the professional world at least.
Yeah. You know, I'm doing a project right now for Johnson & Johnson Innovation with their diversity, equity, and inclusion board fellows. And each of them was chosen, for their diverse point of view and their diverse background and what they bring to that board. And one of the things that I noticed that I think is really interesting and important for leaders to look at is that, like, we looked at where they came from with the intention of being able to share their background and their story, what I call your origin story, in a way that highlights their diversity and the value of that diversity. And it was really interesting because it just wasn't something any of them were doing at the time, you know? And I think we often forget how important it is to other people to know where we come from, what makes us tick, what matters to us as a leader. We get so focused on the doing part, we don't necessarily share the being part, right?
Yeah, absolutely. In my trainings, I see that as well, especially when it's an online training and when you have this little mosaic window. They all appear the same somehow. Yeah, sometimes there are a few who stand out in the training on day one when you don't know them yet very well. Uh-huh. And some stand out a bit because they're a bit more lively, where you see they share a bit more of themselves even in this little window. But most of them are just like poker face, no emotion. When you ask them some questions to be interactive where they're at, it's very hard. It depends on the team. But if they're very much introverts, because they're very analytical people, which you often find in leadership roles as well, then it's very hard to get something out of them which is a bit more personal, which admits that they have to learn something in a specific area, for example. Yeah. And it's really funny because people have built such a wall of, I have to be perfect, I have to have all the competencies, and the higher I climb up the ladder, the least I can admit that I am maybe missing some competencies or that there's still a development area for me in here. For example, when I do communication trainings, we often have the discussion with the client, do we do an assessment where they're at before and where they are afterwards? And what I realize, and it's funny enough, if you do an assessment before, no senior leader wants to admit that they have an improvement area in communication, because they know it's a core skill. And they know certainly for themselves that there is improvement. They would never admit it because it feels like admitting a huge weakness. And so I'm doing my questionnaires now afterwards, because then they realize the gap, and then they realize where they're coming from, where they are today, and then they're ready to admit as well that they're coming from somewhere. So if I tell them afterwards, where were you 3 months ago, in your opinion, on a scale from 0 to 10 in this area, and where are you today? Then there's the gap that shows up. Whereas if I ask them in the beginning, they will rate themselves like somewhere between 7 and 10 everywhere to be safe.
Yeah,
and
right.
I think this is, this is the paradox that people, first of all, have to admit, not to a huge group of other people, but first of all, towards themselves, where they have to improve. And it's not always communication, can be anything. And to admit these things is so unpopular in some senior leadership teams, especially when it's a very competitive environment, that they start also to believe that they do not have to improve in certain areas and don't do it anymore. And then they stagnate. Then the stagnation where, we all have worked with leaders certainly like that, where you feel like this person is just not moving at all. There's no flexibility in the mind. It just feels like so stiff, something, it's not moving. And this is where that comes from. So I think breaking that up and opening again for new development and admitting it, coming back to the vulnerability and communication and courage part. That's exactly where this is happening.
Well, I think that one of the things that I just really didn't understand till fairly recently is that there is an enormous percentage of leaders who have never actually gotten real communications training. Mm-hmm. They've just kind of been in the system their whole life, they've kind of thought, oh, well, you know, I know how to speak, I know how to talk, so I should be able to do this. And they think that everybody around them that's really, really good is just naturally really, really good. And that is, I would say, pretty much never the case. Those people that are really, really good are the ones who've gotten some training, and the ones who haven't gotten training think they should be that good, but they don't realize that you know, the difference that some training in this and just formalizing and understanding what actually works and, you know, understanding why that stuff works so that you can be more creative with it. And, you know, all the best people, they make it look easy, but it wasn't. And they got training.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, even the big ones like Steve Jobs, Barack Obama, to just name two very famous, well-known, excellent speakers, let's say. Yeah, that's how the world sees them, also in Europe.
Sure. Well, and one of my good friends worked with Steve Jobs on all those speeches. He was very, very close to Steve Jobs and worked there. And he told me that once they had created the speech, which took long enough, right, that like they worked very hard on what was going to be in the speech, Steve would practice for an hour for every minute that he was going to be on stage. Boy, I think we'd all be a lot better if we were to commit to something like that, right? And yes, you can't always do that, but sometimes it might be worth doing that if the, you know, opportunity is big enough and the leverage is big enough. And certainly we call Steve Jobs the natural communicator. And I think the reason we do that is because we don't want to be on the hook for working as hard as he did to get that natural, if you know what I mean, right?
Yeah. I see that one. That argument I know as well. Like, no, I'm an introvert. I will never be a good communicator. I
say, untrue. No, untrue.
True. Yeah.
Yeah, no, some of the best people I've ever worked with started out thinking that, and now they're just fabulous communicators, and it's not nearly the effort or the anxiety that it used to be, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And good communication is all about connection. And
yes,
somebody who
totally
is,
agree.
It depends on the personality, but somebody who is an extrovert and a very promoter type of person, for example, they have much more difficulties to connect, even if at first sight they seem to be the big communicators because they're extrovert, they're speaking up and all of that. Whereas you have some introvert people who are really, really, really good listeners. And that is a good communicator because they listen not only with their ears, they listen also with their emotions, they take it all in, they analyze somehow what they hear, and they adapt their message in the ideal way. And this is what a good communicator does. It's not about having prepared like crazy the best messages in the world and just push them out like crazy because who cares? It's more about how they connect. And that's also the secret of charismatic people, which is the people in the room, no matter if they're sitting 10 people in the room or 2,000, even if there are 2,000 people in the room, they will say, I had the feeling that he or she was seeing me or was just understanding me, which is like not logical because you haven't said anything if you're 2,000 in an audience. But
yes,
it's this feeling that is created because they kind of listen, they feel the audience, and they change their tone because they have just a certain sensitivity around that. And this is why I think what you say, some introvert people become fantastic communicators because they have this capability, which is not the sending part first, it's the receiving part first, and then they send out something.
Yeah, I think that's really true. And you know, and when really charismatic, already great speakers can learn that part, it dramatically increases their ability too, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I feel like they were talking directly to me, you know? Yeah, that's a really great thing to be able to generate.
Mm. Yeah, that's when you know that you have presence.
Pardon me?
That's when you have presence, yeah.
That's right. You know, I heard a great definition of charisma. Someone said, well, what if, and I think it's at least a great place to start, what if charisma is nothing more than being fully present with no ulterior motives? And that, to me, sounds like a really important aspect of great listening, which we agree is one of the most important aspects of great communication.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I agree. When people ask me also what are ingredients of charisma, for me it's presence, self-confidence, and authenticity. So you need the confidence to not be focused on yourself, because as long as you're doubting about yourself while you're speaking all the time,
yes,
you're inward looking. So you don't send any energy out, you send it in. So you don't radiate, basically.
Yeah.
So you need a certain level of confidence to just be relaxed, to just be able to be outward focused. That in turn helps you also to be authentic, because you stop ruminating about every gesture and where you're looking and how you should speak and how you should do, because you just start to be yourself. So these two are very much related. And that is what you just said. You create that presence, because suddenly when you're outward looking, you are listening, or you're at least receiving the nonverbal cues as well. You feel if people are on board, if they're irritated, or whatever emotion is out there in the audience. And this is how then people, when they stop following a given path of where they have prepared every single word and every single slide, and they just want to get that through no matter what, instead of doing that, they just disrupt maybe their speech and say something that they have not planned to address what they feel is coming back. And this is what charismatic people are able to do. They just take you with you. And this is why people feel heard and seen by them, no matter how big the audience is, because there is this way of listening that is something which we can't really describe, but what we feel that. We feel it in the presence of the person.
Yes. You know, Ulrike, one of the things that I am just super clear on now, that was not so clear to me in the beginning, more than a decade ago, is that, and I go back to that aspect of understanding what you're doing when you're up there communicating as a leader, and having some training in that, and knowing why you're doing what you're doing, and you know what you're trying to accomplish and how you're trying to accomplish it, to be conscious of that and to put a little preparation in. It just makes all the difference in the world. And then people get up and they're able to have that extra bit of bandwidth available to be paying attention to the audience, to be listening, to be reacting in real time. And it doesn't have to be a whole big thing. It's just enough to really be present, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I work with leaders and training them on that, I always ask them how they want to be when they say, I'm not a good presenter in this or that situation, I'm really not feeling good about myself.
Yeah.
How do you want to be? Tell me three words, how you want to be. And they come up with their three words. And then I ask them what is going on in their head while they start that presentation. And they realize that it's totally self-sabotaging, obviously. No surprise. But they were not ever aware of that. They were just running eternally in this self-sabotaging spiral and not delivering like they want to deliver. That reconfirms their belief that they are not good communicators, and they turn in that circle. Whereas they need to understand, I have this possibility and I can be that leader that is whatever, for example, open, inspiring, and charismatic, maybe. These are maybe their three words. And to dig that out in themselves in a natural way, that they find their way of being charismatic, their way of being open, or their way of being inspiring. And I think inspiration comes mainly from opening up your full self to the audience instead of keeping it to yourself and to stay in the control mode. And that makes this connection again. So, and like you say, you need training for that. People, like you said before, they think, well, communicating is speaking. I can speak. So, so I'm communicating for my whole life already. Why should I?
Right. Why should I study this? Why should I put any effort into this? I can do it already.
Well, it is the human interface. And it's not about words only. It's the whole package.
Yes.
And it is the human interface for absolutely every single thing we do. We cannot not communicate. When we are silent, we communicate as well. People do always an interpretation of what we are sending out, no matter if it's loud or if it's very silent, basically.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I found it always amazing that this super important thing in life is so much undervalued.
I totally agree with you. I mean, if you look at the most successful people in the world, arguably people like Warren Buffett and, Richard Branson, they say the first biggest thing is invest in your communication. Mm. You know, that is the number one thing. If you want to be successful, invest in your communication. And it's never too late. Even if you're the CEO, I think we could all imagine being better, having better, even better results, achieving even more. And as you said, it's the universal interface in business is communication. So the better you are at that, the better your results, I think, are going to be.
Yeah, absolutely. You want people to follow you. I mean, it's like in social media. You want people to follow you, you need to be engaging. They want to listen to you. And
yes.
If you're a CEO, and you think that your message, I have worked with many CEOs, obviously, also in my role as a corporate communications executive. I'm the one behind the camera then. It's so sad to see how a CEO who is a really good guy, who has a feeling for the people and who makes good decisions and all of that, as soon as the camera is on, he loses all his charisma. Becomes very stiff, like, I now have to deliver the message in a perfect way and every word has to be perfect. And no, forget about it. People will not realize the words. They realize how they feel when they look at you. And when they can't feel you, you forget about the words. They will not even take them in. No way. When they feel you can tell them even the hard things, the difficult decisions. If you bring them over in a personal way, in an emotional way that shows how you feel about that. You know, when people announce restructurings, they often then have now a pre-shaped emotional message, which is not theirs. It has been written by a communicator. You say it like that, you know, to round the angles a bit. And obviously it doesn't land because it's totally inauthentic. And people are really offended by that because they think, are they kidding or what? I mean, they don't respect us at all. Whereas you could come in and just say what you really feel about that and say, hey, it's a hard decision, I know that. Not taking the words that are written on any script, just say what comes to your mind. Or imagine you say that to your wife or to your partner, to someone who has a more personal connection. Then you will say things differently. And if you see the gap between that and what is actually said in the official announcement, it's huge. And I think if in communication we would come to something that is more human, more natural, more like we are in our private lives, we would have a totally different life at work as well. And this whole lack of credibility that many senior leaders have would not be there, because there is trust. If you're authentic, if you're the true self, people trust you because they know who you are. If they don't know who you are, how can they trust you?
Yep. So, and I think that what we would both agree on is, it's okay to keep your authentic style. It's good to be you. And there are ways that you can, there are things you can learn and ways that you can bring to that style that's authentically you that will have you be vastly more effective and still be your authentic self and probably even open up an even more authentic self.
Yes, and I think if you do that, and if you see, you might realize that, wow, I have changed the culture in my organization. I have started a new wave of being because then others might follow. This is fantastic.
Yes.
How great is that? And if not, if you really see like, oh my God, the organization hates how I am, if I am myself, then you're just not in the right place. And I think instead of making yourself making yourself mad about the fact that you have to stay in an organization who is not valuing you, then you have to take another decision and go somewhere else. But live your true self somewhere else to give that power to others to do the same thing. Yeah. And having that courage as well. It's a courage because it's financial safety and stability and all of
sure.
that. But I think it's a true decision to be made, because if you don't, then you stick to a career that you will never love, you will never be proud of at the end. And many people who run into burnout run also into burnout because of that, because they never listen to themselves.
Yeah.
They never listen to, you know, this true self that wants to come out and that they don't allow to come out at all for 20 years.
Yeah.
But the message of being authentic, I think, is definitely the best way you can run your career.
Yeah.
And the least stressful one as well at the end, once you have made that step out into the unknown area of being yourself.
Yeah, yeah. I think the way to be the most successful as well.
Yeah, that's true.
So we're getting to the top of the hour. So is there anything that I didn't ask or that we wanted to talk about that we didn't get to that you'd like to just close with?
I think when it comes to communication, there is one thing that I'd like to say just for communication, and that's it. Usually when we communicate, we always shape the message from our perspective. We write our email where we think what's good, what we have to put in, what are the best arguments, and nearly everybody, nearly all the time, is shaping their messages perfectly customized to the only person on this planet who will never receive it. And that's ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think just being aware of that and changing the way and stepping into the shoes of the others and just be more outward looking instead of inward looking would already make a huge change.
That's really great. I might say that communicate from their perspective.
Yeah.
Like let your audience shape your message versus just what you want to say.
Yes, exactly.
I love that. I think it's a great note to end on. And I think that's a great, great, one of many great takeaways. Thank you for your time. Thank you for joining me, Ulrike. And you're welcome. And thank you for joining us. I hope that you've enjoyed this episode. If you did, please share us with others that you think might enjoy us. And if you've could make time to give us a 5-star review, that would help us get the word out about speaklikealeader.show. And Ulrike, thanks again. And we will see you next week on speaklikealeader.show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining the Speak Like a Leader podcast. Go be awesome.